Russell has got to go, but we're going to certainly keep the calls coming. We're going to certainly focus in on Russell, who has got to, what time is it now there in Australia, Russell? Can you tell me? What time do you have there now?
It's 10:15. 10:15. It's 12:15 for Brian.
Oh.
Brian's ready for lunch.
Brian is ready for lunch. All right. Now, Russell, before you go, and Brian, before you go as well, I want to spend a little time on the IPL. I know that you've been doing some commentaries back there in Australia. Were you surprised that the Mumbai Indians won it so comfortably?
Comfortably, yes, but not surprised that they did win it. They seemed like they had the complete team in terms of balance, in terms of the combination. They have had their core group together, and it's also a young combination. So they're going to be pretty quick around the park. In between, they have recruited well. Bolt came in this time around. Bumrah's there. So that team was well managed too. You look at their younger players. Each time they had to, replace or change the team and brought in a youngster, they were all performing. So they were in a great zone. And remember, Andrew, this time around, it was a much tougher tournament, totally due to the players being in a bubble. So life is very different. Generally, you like to go out there and as humans socialize and life to roll on normally. They had to make lots of adjustments and they were one group that stayed together. And in their little group, they had their own hairdresser. They were given everything they needed to feel life was moving on as normal. So not entirely surprised the way they won it, that they won it, but the way they won it by dominating right through in any situation, in any conditions, and with any changes in the team. That was the surprising part for me, that the other teams didn't push them enough.
Mm-hmm. Doc, any questions for Russell in terms of the IPL or anything generally?
Well, in general, Russell, the question about players and technique and all that and trying to solve problems. The question is the solution within the players or is it the purview of the coach?
It's the responsibility of both parties, I reckon. It's a responsibility of everyone. Even the players need to understand, to buy into a coach's plan and also put in the hard work. Now, another aspect that we don't tend to look at, Doc, is mental sharpness too. You keep playing, you keep traveling. It takes a toll on us. And even with you or anyone who's in an office, suddenly they need to take a break. Sometimes players don't get that. So you can go out there and be technically sound and play cricket and move on. But if your mind is not as sharp, you're not going to be making the best decision. And a lot of the decisions are reactions too. So it's a collective responsibility. And there are a lot more aspects to look at than just technique alone.
Okay. Brian, how big is the psychological support for Cricket New Zealand?
Look, I think there's a lot of experienced players. It's interesting, you're talking about coaches and not having played internationally. Coaches, to my mind, are there to be the top 2 inches. They should be dealing with that psychological, the mental state of the game. New Zealand has just appointed Luke Ronke as their batting coach. Mm-hmm. Now, he's the last man that you would imagine would be the batting coach for New Zealand. Technically, he wasn't a bad player, but he was an aggressive player. But Luke Ronke has one thing that I've been told by players, the ability to listen to players and offer good help in terms of how to go about their job. I don't think he's going to change Kane Williamson's game with the bat if Kane Williamson has a technical deficiency. Same with Ross Taylor, same with anybody else, and the same with the West Indies side. I think most of those players have been brought up with the coaches that they respect and have judgment for. It's a matter of working on the top 2 inches. The mental side of the game, the ability to adjust your game according to circumstances and to make the improvements. And you know, the coaches will go looking for somebody who can help them with that kind of adjustment to their game. And so those people are there within New Zealand. Gary Stead has played a limited amount of international cricket. He's the coach. Shane Jurgensen, who's the bowling coach, never played internationally, but has had a long experience in the game. Luke Ronke has had a bit of work there. They had Craig McMillan and Peter Fulton beforehand. So they've got the players around them, and psychologically, I think that they're well prepared in most conditions to adjust to what they face, apart from Australia last year where they got trampled on.
Jamal, in let's say in the NFL and in baseball, the coach and the manager are held responsible for the performance of their charges. And if they don't do well, they get the sack. We've been talking about coaches. What are your opinions on the responsibility of coaches, and should they take fall on their swords when things don't go well?
In any globalized sport, as you rightly said, the coach and the management team, they take probably sometimes more blame, per se, than the players themselves. Administration is key in global sport, and we can argue that cricket is a global sport. I'd like to address some of the points that the callers made as well. You know, I see where there's room and there's certainly need and purpose for, say, you know, Desmond Haynes. His name always comes up in conversation about batting and should be a batting coach, etc. I have been in position where I've obviously been coached. I'm coach myself right now. I've gone through the rigor of trying to get to the level two stage and looking to go on to level three. And I know what coaches have to do in order to get accredited. For somebody to say that, you know, mediocre coaches are who are coaching and that only elite players can coach, I think that argument is stretched. I think there's a need for a balanced approach. I can certainly attest to being in environments where I've had some of the best players, legends, in fact, and they gave us absolutely nothing. And then a guy who just played for a Scots cricket, a couple of games, etc., was able to break down the technical side of the game much better than the guy that we have watched on our television screens from the time we were little boys. So I think that argument is too loose and far-fetched. But at the end of the day, though, I still see the relevance when it comes to major players, certainly guys that have walked through the fire, because at the end of the day, though, as you would know, in any profession, nothing beats that experience. And if you have a guy like Desmond Haynes at your disposal who can be a batting advisor, etc., you know, who can just suggest that Craig Bradford, for instance, you need to be bolder at the crease. I remember when I was in Australia and Liam Thompson, etc., were coming down at me, and I had to make that mental adjustment, and it helped me go through this particular period of my career. I see the relevance of that, but I also see the relevance of the guy who plays cricket, who loves cricket, and who sits down and goes through the rigor of trying to apply and be a coach as well. So I don't want to discount the two perspectives, but I think that you just can't be fast and loose and say, okay, only elite professionals to coach, because as you would know in globalized sports, as we just spoke to as well, some managers never even played a game and gone on as the best managers in the world, etc. It's about man management. It's about being able to identify where you can help a player. And as you rightly said, as Russell, I think Russell would have alluded to as well, it's about buying into the plan. We have to accept, certainly when it comes to West Indian batting in particular, that there are deficiencies in all our batsmen, and there are a plethora of reasons why they are deficient. It goes from the mental, it goes from the physical, it goes from the technical, it goes down to how our cricket is played. Even our first division, we play 3 days, batsmen only require about 60 odd overs in a day, you bat on a fresh pitch each day, on the next week, etc., etc. The our structure of cricket alone. And New Zealand is a very, very good and also the rise of India in terms of the cricket nation, in terms of greatness, so to speak. And these are the lessons that our administration have not been taking on board. Obviously, we have limited resources, etc., but there are better ways to hit these finer points. I leave it there.
Okay, Brian, the last time Darren Bravo was in New Zealand, he scored a double hundred. A few years have passed. He had a stop in his career. His average has dropped from the early 40s now to 37. What are you expecting from Darren, and how important is he to the success of the West Indies?
I see him as an important part of the side. Experience is going to be phenomenal for the West Indies, and he has played well in New Zealand. We know he's a quality player, and it's important that he gets the opportunity to be a leader with the bat, along with Blackwood, along with Holder, who is a key part of the side as well. All those senior players have got to take responsibility for the success of the side in the top order. And Darren Bravo, we know what he's like. He's a very, very good player. And, you know, he's got to show that. And he's got to take responsibility as a leader within the side to do that.
How important is it in New Zealand to try to bat first versus bowl first? I know in the UK it can... You can make decisions based on the weather and that sort of thing. Is it that important in New Zealand, who bats first or who bowls first?
Provided you have confidence in your ability with the bat, batting first is ideal in New Zealand, because that's when the conditions are good. They talk about the pitches here. The ball doesn't seem as much as you would imagine. Yes, there's a fair bit of grass, but that is basically there to assist the pace in the pitches. Generally, the pitches are pretty true. They're pretty good in New Zealand, and I think they're consistent right up and down the country. The two test matches that are going to be played, there's a slight difference in Hamilton and in Wellington because of the quality of the soil. They use two different soils, and that makes a difference. But I think if you bat well, batting first is the way to go about it in New Zealand. Often New Zealand in the past and sides have come to New Zealand have lacked confidence in their ability to bat first and would much rather bowl first and see whether they can get to early wickets and get rid of the opposition cheaply before really putting faith in their batsmen. And New Zealand in recent times have had a greater ability and confidence about batting first. But, you know, if conditions are conducive on day one, that has to be tossed up in the decision-making. It's a matter of whether you look up or look down when you're making that decision. If you look up at the conditions or you look down at the pitch, that's when you have to make a good, solid judgment about how you're going to play.
Well, on another completely different question, in New Zealand's one of the few places with top batsmen and bowlers and doing well in world cricket, but you haven't invested a lot in infrastructure like stands around your cricket grounds, and yet cricket is very popular in New Zealand and you're doing very well. How do you explain the lack of large structures around the grounds in New Zealand and still flourishing in as a cricketing nation?
Lack of money, basically. Most of the grounds are owned by councils, and they put in the facilities as best they can, and they are rented, of course, by New Zealand Cricket to put test matches in. If they want the big games, they go to Eden Park, which is a rugby ground, and you and I could head over the boundary and throw from the boundary on the end of that ground, but it gets 40,000 people in. But it's the only cricket ground that does, apart, well, there's the stadium in Wellington, which basically takes 25,000. But, you know, cricket grounds in New Zealand are basically boutique grounds. They're very much like English county grounds to some extent. And you make a very good point about the infrastructure there. One of the things that they have to be conscious of, and I'm sure they're conscious of it in the Caribbean, is that you have to have overhead covering. You know, skin cancer is a major concern in this part of the world, as it is in every other part of the world. And people getting burnt at cricket, the time is going to come when those people will not want to go to cricket. They'll watch it on television. And the cover has to be there in terms of trees, as there are in some grounds, or facilities, stands with canopies and the like, are going to have to be put in place over a period of time. Otherwise, people will turn away from going to the grounds. So that is an issue that has to be faced, even though the grounds themselves, to my mind, are outstanding in terms of their quality and the pitches that they offer.
Okay, back to you, Andrew.
Yeah, okay, we're going to take, of course, a commercial break now. When we come back, of course, we're going to go to Ghana. We see already Stephen Jacobs on Zoom. And, of course, we also want to hear from our local cricket in relation to our friend Stephen Leslie. Of course, Mason and Guest is brought to an association with the very good friends at Barbados Lottery, promoting youth sport and culture.
When the double draw, you're playing with the mega ball, and tripling, you can triple your winnings just for one more dollar.
Make your winnings even bigger. Call for the Mega Ball today. Promotion ends December 26, 2020.
The Mega Ball.
It's 7:30 in the country. Make that 7:33. We've got Brian Waddle, noted commentator, legendary commentator there in New Zealand on the line. And, of course, we've got our good friend Jamal Smith. And no doubt we're going to be joined by, in fact, we've already been joined by Stephen Jacobs, who's very much there in Guyana, would have had the experience of playing some first-class cricket. Now, let's go to you, Stephen. How are you? Good evening to you. In fact, just before you come in, we got a call. Hello, welcome, Mason and guests.
Yeah, good night. How are you?
Good night.
Good night. How are you?
I'm good. Good night to you.
I'm going to give you an important side of on the first West Indies, sixth West Indies batsman.
Sure.
John Campbell, he's going to be a bit of a gamble. Craig Bradford have to learn to get on the front foot and block it. Darren Bravo have to become a daring, have to relive a few years ago. Jamar Butts have to learn his career cut and hook. Dorothy is going to have to play with a lot more courage. And Jason Holder is have to play as a batsman more than a bowler.
Oh, that was short and sweet. And Doc, do you think he'll get 5 out of 10 for that, Doc? All right, let's take another let's take another call. Hello, welcome, Mason and Guest.
Good evening, Mr. Mason.
Good evening,
Raul here.
Raul.
I regard you equally, sir. Now I want to make a clarion call, and I've been making this for some time as to who should be a consultant to West Indies cricket for life. But I want to 45 what I've been saying over time with this comment here tonight.
Right.
Would you say that Shane Warne would be an authority in the world to sort a great batsman?
Yes.
Would you
yes.
say this?
Yeah, of course.
As Shane Warne, Mr. Larimer said a morning, he came into the studio early and said he was listening to a BBC commentary, something the night. And he heard a commentator say that Shane Warne said of all the batsmen that he encountered, the one that showed the most resilience was Carl Hooper.
Carl Hooper. Oh,
he said, Shane Warne is on record as saying, of all the batsmen that he bowled to, the only one that showed real serious result was Carl Hooper. And Mary's going to wait till the morning to come and break that news to all the Barbadian public.
But Raul,
now, Shane Warne.
But Raul, did Hooper stay that long at the crease?
He did not say he's the most prolific runs getter. He says I think he's referring to technique wise, just like how they say Ran Hurley, technique wise.
Right.
They always use the word effortless with those two persons.
Yes.
It's not the most prolific. You see, people always get confused with prolific runs getting and technique. If you're talking technique tonight, you will have to talk about Carl Hooper.
Mm.
You couldn't left out Carl Hooper. And Shane Warne, the world figure in cricket, would have to be the authority to go on.
Mm.
And this will open a can of worms, but we'll listen for all the feedback. And I equally regard you, sir.
I equally regard you, of course, a very good friend.